Our Fresh Life this weekend in the Summer Fruit Series. We are so excited to hear from Brad Bowles, who is our Whitefish Campus pastor. Brad, thank you so much.
Thank you, Pastor.
We love you and your family, your beautiful family. We got a picture here. Walk us through this wonderful family.
Yeah. So, my wife, Kimberly, been married 14 years now. Okay. We've got Victoria, 16 years old. Brendan, 14 years old. And the little head sticking out in the bottom, there's Izzy, who's 7.
And every one of you have come to faith at this church.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just amazing. How many years now have you been on staff?
Less than a year.
Okay, less than a year. Yeah. So coming on your first anniversary.
Yep.
And in your time here, in your time at the church, what's been your favorite sermon series so far?
Favorite series? Oh, well, I guess I got to go with Majesty, because that was the series that kind of finally broke down the walls.
Wow, going into Christmas.
Yeah.
Okay, all those titles.
Yep.
Wonderful Counselor, Everlasting
Father. Everlasting Father.
Yeah, and that's when you came to know Jesus.
Yep.
Beautiful. Okay, let me ask you this, just getting to know you a little bit. What does this picture make you think of here? Any memories from your childhood?
A lot of my childhood spent in a few casts.
Okay,
sure.
Tell me about when your brother broke his femur, was in a cast, a full body cast. Let's hear about this.
I'm trying to defend myself, but there's no
way
to do it. There's
no way to do it.
So my brother broke his femur. We grew up racing motorcycles,
okay.
And he broke his femur on his motorcycle and was in a full body cast. We were downstairs playing pool. We had a pool table in our house, and I don't remember the whole details, but typical brothers.
True or false?
Fighting.
You turned him over like a turtle.
I did.
Locked him in the basement.
I did.
And left him there until your parents came home.
I did.
Now let me say this: as someone who's broken a femur, this is something that I took personally when I found this out. It was disturbing to find this that you could be so cruel and absolutely heartless.
I've come a long way.
Okay,
Pastor.
Very good. God, Jesus is working in your heart. Now, just coming on your journey as a father, if I were to give you a baby. And hold this up here, and a onesie.
I already know where this one's going.
And a diaper. Tell me which order you would put these on the baby when changing the diaper and getting the child dressed.
Diaper, then onesie.
Okay, true or false, you, when changing Brendan, you put the onesie on and then the diaper and your wife found him the next morning in that manner.
That's true. And to make matters worse, I didn't actually button the onesie either, so it had worked its way up over his head.
So problematic. Okay,
problematic.
But we figured this out.
Yep.
Okay, your kids are still here, so everything must have...
He survived fairly well.
Okay, now let me ask you if any memories come to your mind when you see this picture.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Remodeling the house.
Mm-hmm.
Toilet being worked on.
Yep. Yep. So when Kimberly and I first got married, I had a little house here in town that was pretty much a bachelor pad to that point. So totally gutted it, gutted the bathroom, pulled the toilet off, put a new toilet down, and had put a rag down there to keep things from falling in there.
Okay.
Forgot the rag was there.
Got it.
Used the facilities.
Okay.
Did not flush.
Then realized the rag was there.
Then
okay,
realized
so that was
the rag
painful
was there.
Having to reverse...
Painful and disgusting.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Now let me ask you this spiritual segue. What fruit of the Spirit are you going to be talking about today in our Summer Fruit Series?
I get to talk about self-control.
Okay. Well, we can't wait to hear it. Thank you so much. Come on, everybody.
Thank
Let's
you,
hear it for Brad Bowles, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing like having all your dirty laundry aired for the whole church to see. But I am so thankful to be here today. Strand Theater. I mean... I don't want to call it ground zero, but I mean, think of all the firsts that took place in this. In fact, this was the first theater that we came to when we first came to Fresh Life. And then you think of Skull Church and just the salvations that took place in this room. And it is so humbling and such an honor to be able to be here today to talk to you guys. And I have to thank Pastor Levi for this incredible privilege. You know, he told us that we were going to do this quite a few weeks ago, and I was so excited and so horribly terrified at the same time. It was just a conflict of emotions, and you know, he walked us through it, and it has been so amazing. We are so blessed to have a leader like Pastor Levi. And Jenny, come on, my Jenny, unbelievable. And just the faithfulness that the two of them showed when they just followed what God put on their heart to come to Northwest Montana, plant this church. It has impacted me and my family in such amazing ways, and I will forever be thankful that they came here. I also want to take a moment and thank Pastor John Mark. I tell you what, you guys here in the Strand that faithfully come here you have one of the best guys to lead you in this church. He and his wife, Amanda, their hearts are just so big for this house and so big for each and every one of you. You truly are blessed to have them here, and I am thankful that he lent me the keys to the shop today. So, we're going to get into God's Word. If you brought a Bible with you, let's open up to Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28. I'm going to give you just a minute to get there. It's just one verse. We're going to put it on the screen for you as well. So, Proverbs 25, 28, and there we find, "Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls." Now, what spirit are we referring to here? Well, Pastor Levi and I did a pretty good job of giving that away, but we're going to go ahead and take a look at the New Living Translation to find our answer. And there we see, "A person without self-control is like a city with broken down walls." Self-control. Let's first start by defining what is self-control. Well, to me, self-control is doing the right thing regardless of how you feel. Regardless of how you feel. We need to also kind of put some framework around what is the right thing. The right thing isn't based on how we're feeling. We already covered that. It's certainly not based on what society says is okay. I think we all know we could wake up every day, make 100 decisions that are acceptable by society's standards, and sin 100 times. It's just the facts. It's a fallen world we live in. Doing the right thing means we need to be doing the things that are pleasing to God. That's it. Wake up. What can I do today that is pleasing to God? That's going to be what the right thing is. And there's some problems, though, with self-control. Firstly, self-control, when we fail at accessing and using self-control, our failures are public and wide open for the world to see. But our successes, they're largely internal, aren't they? Think about it. We've all been at a restaurant and saw somebody whose steak was overcooked, and he throws a fit and belittles the staff and just makes a jerk of himself. And it's pretty easy to be like, that dude needs some self-control. But when have we ever congratulated the perfect stranger who just happens to be a recovering alcoholic who had to walk past the beer cooler to go get a gallon of milk? You see, we all have our internal temptations, struggles, demons, whatever, that we have to wrestle with every day. And when we succeed at that, generally it's only us that knows about it. But when we fail, it's generally wide open for the public to see. Now, the other problem with self-control is we've been fooled our entire lives from the time we were little, because everyone was told, you need to get some self-control. You need to learn some self-control. Well, the good news is I'm here today to tell you, you don't need to learn it. You don't need to get it. As Christians walking in Christ, God has put the spirit of self-control in us. It is in us. 2 Timothy 1:7 says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." Now, sound mind also translated as self-discipline or self-control. God gave it to us. Our problem, we have to access it. We have to choose to access self-control so that we can make the decisions in our life that are pleasing to God. Sin is not a problem of choosing to do the wrong thing. Sin is a problem of choosing to not do the right thing that is pleasing to God. I don't know any Christians that wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to go sin today. I'm going to go do this in sin. But we all face decisions every day that we have to choose to make the right choice that is pleasing to God. And we fail. We fail. I've titled this message, Paint the Corners. Paint the Corners. Now, those of you that are a fan of the game of baseball will recognize that term as describing a pitcher who has the ability to throw the ball right over the inside, right over the outside of the plate, across the corners of the plate for strikes. And they do this because that's a far more difficult pitch to hit than one that's just piped right down the middle. Now, in my lifetime growing up, there was no one better at this than Greg Maddux. This guy, 22-year career, first ballot Hall of Famer, four-time NL Cy Young Award winner, 300 wins, 3,000 strikeouts. incredible career. Now, when I say that, you probably picture this hulking athlete chiseled with a cannon for a right arm. Well, those of you that know who Greg Maddux is, you know this guy looks like he should be doing your taxes. All right? I have seen professional bowlers who look more athletic than Greg Maddux. The guy could not throw 96 miles an hour. So how did he amass such an amazing career? Well, there was no one better at mastering the control of his pitches and painting the corners. He was almost unhittable at times. He was amazing. Now, I get not all of you like baseball. It's getting to be a pretty lonely island out there for us baseball fans. Some of you might not even like sports, but one thing we can all relate to is having to paint a room or paint a wall. We all need that accent wall in the house now, you know. That needs to be seafoam green. I don't even know what that is, but okay, let's paint the wall seafoam green. Now, on the list of home improvement projects that I'm capable of doing, painting ranks dead last. I hate to paint. It is awful. It is. I don't have the patience. It's tedious. It's messy. It takes way more time than it should. And I have no time for painting a room. So I Googled, what is the best way to paint a wall? Seriously. And what I found out was the best way to paint a wall is you need to paint the edges in first. Okay, and you got to cut the corners in. Paint the corners of the wall first. That way you can grab the roller and just paint the rest of the wall. Because we've all done it the other way, right? Where we try to paint the wall and we get done and the wall's great, but now we got to repaint the ceiling and we got to repaint that wall and we got to go in and touch up those corners because we couldn't get the roller in there. So we need to paint the corners first to effectively paint a wall. How do we do that? How do we learn to paint the corners of our life so that we can do the things that are pleasing to God? The first thing we need to do, first point, we need to learn how to master our moods. Our moods are a barrier to our self-control. How many times have we done something or said something that we regret doing because we were hungry, tired, sad, angry? Just me? I mean, how many times have we seriously, something so simple has just blocked our ability to access self-control and do the things that are pleasing to God? It happens all the time. Our defenses against sin and temptation are useless when we let our moods and our feelings control and drive our actions. It gets in the road. It gets in the road. Now, I'm not, at what point, by the way, did our feelings become so darn important to us? We've got generations of people now that have been raised to believe that their feelings are the most important thing in the world. That hurts my feelings. How does that make you feel? Validate my feelings. Church, I'm here to tell you, your feelings don't need validated, because here's the problem with your feelings. They're fleeting. They're here one minute, they're gone the next. I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm depressed, I'm overjoyed, our feelings are like a pinball. Why would we want to make decisions based on something that 2 minutes from now may not even be a factor? Now, I don't say this to discount any of us that have gone through traumatic or painful events in our life that have caused an overwhelming feeling to come over us. And you know what? We believe God can heal that, and we just pray that he heals those wounds and restores those things. But seriously, why would I ever want to hurt somebody else or myself because I wasn't smart enough to pack a lunch? We need to take care of ourselves. We need to eat right. We need to exercise. We need to find things that we can do to decompress from our days so that we can stay centered and keep our feelings and moods in their proper place. Now, we can certainly go to the Bible and find dozens and dozens of examples of people who allowed their moods to be a barrier to accessing self-control, therefore not making decisions that were not pleasing to God, and just failing. But if we go to Genesis 39, I think we see a great picture of someone who was able to master his mood and make a decision that was pleasing to God, despite great temptation. And of course, this is the story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Now, Joseph was a little bit of a precocious young man, and as such, he drove his brothers crazy. So they sold him into slavery, a fate far worse than being left on the ground in a body cast. Not that that was good, but I didn't sell him into slavery, so that is better. That is better. I still can't defend myself. That was horrible. So anyway, his brothers sell him into slavery, and he goes on to have just trial after trial and hardship after hardship, and he ends up in Egypt, and he's working in the house of Potiphar, who is a high officer of the Pharaoh of Egypt at the time. So Potiphar's an important guy. He's a big guy. He's got a big job. He's gone a lot. Left home alone with Joseph is Potiphar's wife. We're going to call her Mrs. Robinson of biblical times. If you didn't get that, ask your mom and dad. Mom and dad, sorry for the awkward lunch conversation you're going to have. But so she's home alone. She's a lonely person. She's a little lovesick. She's got Joseph. He's looking good. So she propositions him. Joseph, lie with me. He refuses. Again, Joseph, lie with me. He refuses again. Finally, she like gets aggressive about it and like grabs him. Joseph, lie with me now. He peels out of his robe and flees the scene. He's gone. So you say, Brad, okay, what mood is it that Joseph was struggling with here? I didn't hear a mood. Well, we know from the text that he was a young, strong, handsome man. Now, guys, help me out here. Having once been young, having once been strong, having once even been a marginally handsome man, I think it's safe to assume the mood he is dealing with was he was likely in the mood. Am I right or am I right, guys? I'm right. So despite faced with tremendous temptation, not once, not twice, but several times, he makes the right choice that is pleasing to God and leaves. He flees. Now, what is his reward for this? Well, Mrs. Robinson's a little ticked off that he didn't give in to her advances. So she falsely accuses him of assaulting her, and he's imprisoned. So, wow. So I do the things that are pleasing to God, and I end up in prison? Well, there's a lesson here, and that lesson is our immediate reward for doing the things that please God may not be a reward at all, but the eternal gain will be immeasurable. 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 Now, I also think of my 16-year-old daughter when I tell this story. You see, 4 years ago, when the O2 experience was first here, hey, Friday night, anybody here? Yeah? Amazing. Well, when it was here 4 years ago, this then 12-year-old little girl, God just grabbed a hold of her. And even better, she grabbed hold of God. We just heard Pastor Levi talk about hanging on to God with your eyelashes in the Off the Chain series. Well, this little girl, she grabbed hold of God with her eyelashes and every hair and fiber of her being. And she is such an amazing young lady. I mean, her heart for God and people and her knowledge of Scripture, it's to be envied. She's amazing. Well, also at this event, she took a firm, strict stance to guard her purity. To guard her purity. Now, 4 years later, she's in high school, walking the halls of a modern-day high school, on fire for the Lord, guarding her heart and guarding her purity. What has been her reward for that? Honestly, a lot of alienation, a lot of loneliness. High school's not fun for her. And as a dad, it just breaks my heart. And it breaks my heart even more to know that she's the unique one. Could you imagine if she was the normal one and all the normal kids that are doing the things that are acceptable in high school were the ones that were outcast? And Father, forgive me if I ever miss an opportunity to let her know that she is loved. She is chosen. She's equipped. She's more precious than jewels. She is the daughter of the one true King. And the decision she's making right now will benefit her on into eternity. So dads, if you're raising girls at home, you better be telling them that, because they're not going to get it in this world. They're not going to get it from their peers. And if we're raising boys, we need to raise them to be honorable young men. Amen? Yeah. Amen. So we need to master our moods. Second thing we need to do is we need to master our words. Whoa. Hear a pin drop. Yeah, Proverbs 13:3 says, "He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction." We know this, right? Our words are powerful. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That was a lie, Mom. My mom's here today. That was a lie. Our words are powerful. Our words can tear down. Tear down. So we need to watch what we say, right? Seems real simple, right? James has some thoughts on that. James 3:8 says, "But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison." Happy 4th. Have a great week. Good luck with all of that, right? So our words can destroy and tear down and ruin, yet we can't control it because it's an unruly evil and full of poison. What do we do with this? Now, James is certainly referring to, you know, people speaking blasphemy and purposely going out and tearing people down. But I think what James is more so getting at here is our words, even spoken with the greatest of intentions, can still lead to offense, right? Right? We see this playing out in Matthew 16 with Peter. Peter's talking to Jesus. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. Peter knows that, and Jesus knows, when he gets there, he's going to be crucified. He's going to die a humiliating, painful, awful, awful death. So Peter, speaking to his friend, really a beautiful picture of, if you think about it, this Peter lovingly just pleading with his friend, "Don't go, stay with us. We can do more together. Don't go, Jesus. Please stay." How does Jesus react to Peter's loving plea for his well-being? "Get behind me, Satan." That's what he says. "Get behind me, Satan." Now, Peter didn't mean to offend Jesus with this. He meant it lovingly. But Jesus knew he was sent to earth to walk in this world, living a sinless, spotless life so that he could go to the cross and pay a debt that you and I could never pay. There was only one way. That was it. Jesus knew that. So Peter's plea, as great as it was an offense to Jesus. He's like, "What are you talking about, bro? You know what I have to do here. Get behind me." Now, this kind of thing has played out in my life as well. When I was 19 years old, my dad was killed in an avalanche while he was snowmobiling. And, you know, clearly a dark and difficult time in our family's life. But I remember for months afterwards just almost walking around with a sense of anxiety that I was going to run into somebody who I hadn't seen since the accident. Because that story always, that would always go something like this. You know, "Oh, Brad, we're so sorry about your dad. That's such a tragedy, you know. We're thinking about you guys. And you know what? It's going to be okay." Yeah? It's going to be okay. So this guy who's larger than life to me is just taken from me, and it's going to be okay. How about I punch you in your nose, but don't worry, afterwards, it's going to be okay. No, it's not. Now, these people meant it with love and compassion, and I didn't punch anybody in the nose, even though I wanted to sometimes. But their words of "it's going to be okay" was just another reminder to me that it wasn't going to be okay. So we have to watch what we say. How do we do that? How can we know we can't be 100% successful of it. James says so. We're going to fail. But how can we try to prevent putting ourselves in situations where even unintentionally we offend? Well, the first thing we need to do is we need to think before we speak. Think before we speak. We've all heard it. I've heard it a million times. My lips run faster than my brain. It's gotten me in way more trouble than it's ever benefited me, but it does. It does. Are these words going to help or are they going to hurt? Are they going to build up or are they going to tear down? Put yourselves in the shoes of the person you're talking to. How would I receive this if they were saying it to me? It's a hard thing to do, but we have to think before we speak. We have to speak with love in our voice. Love. Yeah, Raul. Love. We got to speak with love in our voice. And guys, I'm sorry. We suck at this. I don't know if I can say suck, but we suck at this. We are not good at this. So, guys, this is what I want you to do. The next time you're in a disagreement with your wife, and it's getting to that point where we're going to have a marital moment here, right? Pause, and before you say anything else, say, honey, I know we're disagreeing about this, but I want you to know this one thing. I love you. I love you with all my heart. Try carrying on that conversation and then getting mad at your wife. And wives, try getting mad at your husband after he's just said that to you. It can happen because we got a lot more words to say and we could screw one of them up, but just try it. Finally, we need to give our full attention when we speak. How effective am I at communicating this message if I'm up here looking up the screen, looking over here? Yeah, you know, watch what you say. Not very good, right? So we need to square our shoulders. We need to look people in the eye. We need to speak with love, and we need to think about what we're going to say. Here's the trick with words. Words are like arrows. Their impact is determined the second you let them go. And you can't bring them back when they're gone. Let's choose our words carefully. Last thing we need to do, third point, is we need to learn how to master our reactions. My beautiful wife, Kimberly, and I have three children. We have Victoria, who's 16. We talked about her a little bit already. Brendan, who's 14. Brendan, amazing young man. He keeps us laughing nonstop. And he has a heart for serving God and serving this house. Like, you would not believe. If Pastor would let him put a cot up here somewhere, we'd never see him. He'd live here. And I tell you what, as a dad, leading a family that knows that they don't have to wonder, where are we going to be Saturday night or Sunday morning? Because they know we're going to church, and then we're waking up and we're serving. If that's my sole legacy I leave my children, I'm happy. I'm totally happy. So then we've got Brendan, 14, great kid. And then we have our youngest, Isabel, who's 7. Now, when Kimberly was pregnant with Isabel, the fact that there was a 7 and 9 year age gap between our kids wasn't lost on us. But we naively had ourselves convinced that this was going to be fantastic. This is going to be awesome. Right? She's going to have a big brother and a big sister, and they're going to love her, and they're going to play with her, and we're going to have, you know, 4 extra sets of hands around to help out. It's going to be incredible. We were wrong. Couldn't have been more wrong. Of course, what we didn't anticipate was Isabel, who she didn't want to come into this world. She's like, no, I'm staying. This is great. I don't want it. They had to, like, take her out, and I think she's a little mad about it still, to be honest with you. I mean, don't get me wrong. She's an absolute joy. She's the first one to meet me at the door. Daddy, she's happy when I get home. She is an absolute joy to our family. But this child is spirited. I mean, she has a furnace in her belly that burns at 1,000 degrees, and she's either 100 miles an hour or zero. Totally hot or asleep. I mean, there is no middle ground with her. She is a handful. Now, Victoria does a pretty good job with her. And when I say pretty good job, I mean she tolerates her. She's like, okay, I have to be nice to my sister, and I have to play with her, and I have to do these things. And she does pretty good overall with them. Brendan, nope. No patience, no tolerance. And those two, they go at it. They are like the Tom and Jerry of our house. There's always some comedic quarrel going on. And the funny thing is their fights all follow the same pattern. It's a cycle, right? It's, he did this, so I did that. And, well, she's doing that, so I did this. And it's this vicious cycle of retaliation, right? And we fall into that trap just as easily as brothers and sisters do, don't we? Someone does something to us, we are so quick to strike back. I've got a great story, and it's only a great story because it stars me as the idiot. And it also highlights the fact that I've just failed at all three of these points that I've tried to teach you today. So to say this was a convicting message to put together would be absolutely correct. I used to work in Kalispell, and we live in between Kalispell and Whitefish. So I had to drive Highway 93 North every day. Now, I know it's not big city traffic or anything like that, but those of us from the Valley know that 93 North from Reserve to Whitefish in the morning or right after work, there's no maddening stretch of road in the Valley, right? You've always got that one guy in the left lane doing 65 and a half miles an hour, and you can't get around anybody. Everyone's jockeying for position. No one has any patience. It's a maddening stretch of road. So I'm driving home from work. Coincidentally, had a bad day. So there's the mood failing me, right? I've already got one barrier up to being able to access self-control. And as I approach Reserve, I just missed the light, so I stop, and I am left lane, first car. Guys, pole position, right? I have pole position. I'm in control of my destiny. I look to my right, and there's this sweet little old lady sitting there, and it's like, I know she's not getting off the line. So I have pretty good control of how the rest of my drive's going to go. Now, that's still no guarantee. We know this, because Reserve's going to be green, and people are going to be pouring onto Highway 93 heading north. But today, like Moses parting the Red Sea, nobody goes north. Everybody's heading south or keeping going east-west. So by the time the light turns green, I've got miles of clear road ahead of me. Not a single car in between me and as far as I can see. So I go, predictably, the nice little old lady, I don't even think she knew the light was green yet. I'm gone. I'm out there. I'm ahead of everybody. Now, I'm not in any big rush at this point. I'm still kind of get over my bad day. And so as I'm driving, I kind of look in my rearview mirror, and I see this car coming up behind me. And they're going a little quicker, so it's like, all right, I'll get out of the road and let them blow by. I'll still have smooth sailing. And so I kind of casually start to get to the right lane, and as I just start to turn, I look in my rearview mirror, and here comes this car swinging around the right side of me. Now, they did nothing wrong. They certainly didn't do anything that I haven't done 1,000 times myself. But for whatever reason, I took this as some kind of offense. So I'm like, what is this jack wagon doing? I don't know what a jack wagon is. I don't know where I picked it up from. It seems to be a popular word for me when I'm in traffic or I could say worse things, but we all agree it's not exactly a term of endearment. So as the words jack wagon are leaving my lips, I look over. You want to know who's coming by on my right? Jenny Lusco. Church, I called my pastor's wife a jack wagon. Now, we have all stuck our foot in our mouth before, but agreed, if you call your pastor's wife a jack wagon, you pretty much take the jack wagon award home yourself, don't you? Now, those of you that know Jenny know that, or have even ever met her, she is the kindest, most caring, most compassionate, most gracious, lovely woman you would ever want to meet. Jenny, if you're listening, you are not a jack wagon. You are awesome. The Bulls family loves you, and I am truly sorry. But do you see what I did? Bad mood, bad reaction, bad choice of words. I put up all these barriers to me accessing my self-control, and I did something that, believe me, I regret. Thankfully, she didn't see me, because she would have been all happy, hey, waving, and I'd have been like, I just called you a jack wagon. Wow. That's a sobering moment. We are all too easily offended and too quick to strike, aren't we? I'm going to ask the worship team to join me back up on stage. So how can we guard against these reactions? Church, we need to react with love. Matthew 5:44, this is Jesus talking now. He says, but I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. We need to pray for our enemies, right? We need to love our enemies, right? Because as long as we want to keep reacting the way they are or striking back, it's just going to continue forever, isn't it? C.S. Lewis puts it amazingly. If we look at this quote, it says, if they are wrong, they need your prayers all the more. And if they are your enemies, then you are under orders to pray for them. Under orders. That's not a suggestion. That's not a best practice. You are flat under orders to pray for them. And aren't we seeing this playing out right now in amazing ways in Charleston? We all know the story by now. This young man senselessly walks into a Bible study at a church and just for no reason kills 9 people. And I don't know if you got to see any of the video coverage of the arraignment that took place, but you know, time and time again, these family members would step up to the microphone and say, "You took everything from me, but I forgive you. And I pray God has mercy on your soul, but I forgive you." It's beautiful, isn't it? Are you the kind of Christian that can look in the mirror right now and say, if that happened to me, I could do that? I could have that kind of heart for forgiveness? We have to forgive. How can we not forgive when God sent his son down to earth to live that sinless, spotless life, only to pay with a death on the cross and pay a debt that we deserved, but we could never pay? How can we not forgive little offenses and great offenses? He forgave us. We didn't deserve it. We did nothing to deserve our forgiveness and our salvation. But he forgave us. We have to be able to forgive. The other thing we need to do is we need to keep our focus on and our faith in God. Read the book of Job sometime. Job, upstanding, righteous man of God, had everything taken from him. Had his family taken from him, had his wealth taken from him, had his possessions taken from him, had every ounce of his character stripped from him, and as a final straw, they took his health from him. And he had his moments of, why me, God? Why? That's okay. But not one time did he ever take his focus off of or lose his faith in God. And he was restored. He was restored twofold all that was taken from him. We need to keep our focus on and our faith in God. How can we not have his heart if that is who we focus on? How do we know now if we are properly applying and accessing self-control in our life and doing the right things that please God? Ask yourself this: how many problems and how much drama do I have in my life? If you have a lot of problems or you have a lot of drama, ask yourself, am I applying self-control in the areas that I need to? Sorry, Jay-Z, you got 99 problems. I guarantee you, lack of self-control is one of them. So how do we apply this? Well, maybe ask yourself, what if I forgave that person? What if I just went and spoke a little love over them? What if I took a little better care of myself and kept my moods a little more in line so that I didn't have to worry about all these barriers getting in my road? I bet you could find a lot of resolution to your problems, and I know you'll be able to prevent a lot more. Church, will you pray with me? Father, thank you so much for your word and the promises that it contains. God, thank you for these gifts, these fruits of the Spirit of self-control, of love, of patience, of thank you for all of them, God. God, I pray that you just fill us every day afresh with your Spirit, with these spirits, with these fruits, God, and that you give us the strength and the courage and the boldness to choose to access them and to choose to do the things that please you. God, thank you for your son, Jesus, and it's in his name we pray. Amen. Come on, church, sing out.
Wow, that was incredible. Such good truth. We just wanted to say thank you so much for joining us online.
If at any point you made a decision to follow Christ during that teaching, first of all, congratulations. And second, we would love to know about it. You can click the Know God button. It's going to pull up a form. We're not going to send you any junk mail or Tupperware or anything like that. But we would love to send you some helpful resources in walking with God. It's going to include a Bible, a letter from Pastor Levi, and a few other things as well.
And let's be honest, everybody's got a story. You have one. And on this website, on the bottom of the page, there's a little button that says share your story. You can use that as a way to just tell us about how God has used the ministry of Fresh Life to impact your life. Those stories are like lifeblood for our staff, for our team, for everybody, because it just shows how God is using everything that we're doing, everything that he's doing through this church to impact people's lives. In the same light, if you wanted to support the ministry through giving, you can do that as well. At the top of the website, there's a button that says give. And you can support financially the work that God is doing through the church.
Hey, thanks again for watching. We hope to see you back here next weekend.